And if I'm LeBron, I love the nucleus I have there. I love Ingram. I love Kuzma, Ball. I'm not keen on the guys they brought in. Rondo, I think, can be valuable. I'm still not sure about Stevenson and JaVale McGee. But there's a bigger plan here, and it's a plan that's not necessarily for now. And that's what I give Magic Johnson credit for. Plus, LeBron is going to do exactly what Michael Jordan did, what Kobe Bryant did, what Magic Johnson did. And that's go into the low post more. They all did it later in their careers, but LeBron will be better than all of them in the low post, because he's bigger, more physical. But Jordan did it, Kobe did it, Magic was able to do it as well, and LeBron's going to do that. So I think when Magic was saying, judge me on these 2 years, and if I haven't done well, then I don't deserve to keep this job. Paraphrasing here. He knew he had LeBron James.
The Dan Patrick Show.
Love it. It's my favorite.
Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio.
I like beer cause it is good. I drink beer because I should. If there was a song to sing, I sing it and beer you bring.
Beer is good! Beer is good! Beer is good! It's good!
And now, from Napa Valley, California, it's Beer Nuts featuring brewmaster Colin Kaminsky.
Welcome to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts. It's another beautiful beer drinking day here in the Napa Valley. It's a little bit foggy this morning, but I think it's going to warm up a little bit later. John, we took a couple weeks off. You were off in Hawaii.
Good times.
Yeah, did you have fun over in Hawaii?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it makes you want not to come back to reality, so I'm back to reality now, so fantasy's over.
Did you think of moving to Hawaii while you were there?
I thought about it, but then, you know, it's good in Napa, too. Napa's great, but Hawaii has, you know, snorkeling and a couple things that Napa doesn't have yet, you know. I mean, if you want to snorkel in the Napa River, you might come up with a wetsuit. Yeah. Full of, like, rocks.
Krill.
Yeah, krill. I just remember that every time we broke a sales record, and I think you were there at that time too. Yeah. The owner Joe used to jump into the Napa River and come up looking something between like the Moss Man and the creature from the Black Lagoon, or
you know,
I don't know what he was jumping into, but he stopped doing that after a while. After we kept breaking records,
so one year, the last year, he came up covered in some baby crustacean of some sort. It was some
creepy crawly.
Yeah, some little. It was it was like thousands of little
things.
Little shell based. I don't know what they were. Yuck. And like little tiny shrimps, smaller than a grain of rice or something.
Yeah, poor guy.
And that was the last year. After that, he promoted Bobby to general manager.
Yes, and then he had to jump in.
And then he made Bobby do it, and Bobby's like, I'm not doing that.
I don't think he did do it. I don't remember seeing him doing it.
But so we've got some guests in the studio today. Don Barkley, formerly from Napa Smith.
That's right, exactly. It's a pleasure being here today.
It's always good to have you, Don. So you retired?
As of January 1st, I left Napa Smith Brewery, and now I'm doing a little bit of consulting here and there and enjoying life.
So that sounds great, actually.
Yeah. And enjoying beers, too.
And
imagine that.
I know, you get to try different beers. So
after a whole life. Lifetime. Now I can really, you know, select a whole bunch of different beers, and I've got a couple of them here too.
So. Oh, nice! And you brought your wife with you today.
I did. I brought Leslie along.
Hi, Leslie.
Well, hello, Colin. It's good to be here.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And they just went to Hawaii too. Same hotel, same island.
Oh, wow.
Maui. Yeah.
Did you guys plan that together?
I don't know, but it was pretty interesting talking to them before the show started. That they did a lot of same stuff.
And then also our special guest in the studio. Come here. Say hi, Denim.
Hi.
Denim, my son, is in the studio as well. Thank you for coming, Denim.
You're welcome.
Denim's a cute kid. I think he needs to go to Hawaii next time.
Yeah. Okay. I know my kid is not going to get up this early to come to this radio show. Mine's asleep still.
Denim keeps asking to go to Hawaii. He's like, when do we get to go to Hawaii?
There you go.
Well, we had a great time in Hawaii, and that's the first time I'd been back to that area for 40 years.
Wow.
And so I went around to a couple of places that I was, made some memories, and said, oh, this is not at all what it used to be.
Right. <You know?
laughs> But it was fun. Had a good time. And had some good beers over there, too.
Did you have some local beer?
Yeah. Some of them, the Maui Brewing does a really nice job, and their tap room is large and really well put together. I think they must have, at least 12 beers on tap that are all their own. And
Which one did you like the best out of them?
Egads. Let's see, which one? I think probably their IPA, but yes. I don't recall exactly which.
I think something like Big Swell.
Yeah,
Big Swell IPA. Yeah, that was my favorite, too.
That was nice, too. It wasn't completely overdone with hops, but it was nice, substantial, just really good IPA. Yeah, they did a good job.
So. And I'm afraid to ask, what does a pint of beer cost in Hawaii now?
Oh, boy. When you're on vacation, you don't ask questions.
Yeah, right.
You just shell it out. So. I don't even know what
I think the the first time I went to Hawaii, the thing that shocked me the most was you had to pay extra for toast on your breakfast.
Oh.
It came with rice for free, but if you wanted toast, it was $2 extra.
Oh, my God. There you go. $2 slice of toast. That sounds perfect. Napa Smith is on their way, and they've done a really good job. And Stein Cervic over there is their master brewer, and so he's cruising right along. And the tap room's doing much better than it did in the old location. Right, the new location is down there in Vallejo, one block south of the intersection of 29 and 37, and the tap room's really nicely set up and do a good job. They've got music on a regular basis. And then they've done things like, they had haircut day, where a couple of barbers came in and just volunteered their time and cut kids' hair for a day. And they've done a few things like that. So Napa Smith's doing a good job down there.
So how long have they been in this new location? I remember last time I think we had you on, they were getting ready to move. So everything has moved over now.
Yeah, everything's moved over, and it's basically been 1 year in the new location.
And is it a bigger facility than the one you guys left?
Yeah, it's actually pretty close to the same size, but the previous location was kind of cut up into a lot of different smaller sections, so it wasn't as conducive to production level brewing as this one is now. So it's all in one big space, and it's nice. It's nice. Brand new filler. And
They finally got rid of the old filler.
Yeah, finally got rid of the old filler and got a new one.
I hung out all day one day with that filler, and that was a lot of work. That was a tedious little thing to fill.
Yeah, it was a Meyer 24 spout filler, and the guys that got it, unfortunately, they drove out of the driveway with this thing on the truck and did okay, but I guess when they got to their final location, they were lifting it up, and it fell off the forklift.
So, oh, no.
Yeah.
They had a fair amount of repair to do.
Yeah, so 1972. And, what's interesting about that filler is it actually was at the Krug Winery, and it was filling champagne as well before we got it and started making beer. Sierra Nevada Brewing Company bought it first, then the Mendocino Brewing Company had it and filled millions of bottles with it, and then we got it down at Napa Smith for a few years before.
So you'd already worked with that filler?
Oh, I'd worked a lot with that filler.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But on the way, and now, there's also this news about the Mendocino Brewing Company finally slid under the waters, which was unfortunate, and that happened, I think, in February, February.
Yeah, I was surprised they didn't sell Mendocino.
I was amazed, too, and I have no idea. I mean, that brand, obviously, it had been around for a long time, but it had a market share all the way across the United States. And why somebody didn't pick it up just for the fact of the market penetration of that brand,
even if they didn't buy the equipment and they just bought the brands.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like it would be ripe for an acquisition by AB or something to make another... Yeah. Obfuscated craft arm, yeah.
That's right, just with market penetration itself. But for whatever reason, I don't know, they're asking too much money or whatever it was.
Well, and the owner had his own little colorful life.
VJ Mollia, he is, he's still in all kinds of hot water. He's still in England and house arrest. He's had his passport taken away and all the rest. So he's on basically house arrest in England because he only owes, You know, we all, you know, owe a few dollars here and a few dollars there, and sometimes it bothers us. Well, Vijay Mallya owes the Indian government $2 billion. At least that's what they say.
Right, yeah. I remember there was a story years ago where they had charged him finally.
Yes.
And he disappeared on his boat.
Yes.
And then that was the last I've heard of him.
It sailed away.
Right.
So he's alive.
And it's one of these big boats.
That's right.
Yeah, so the boat alive? That lands a helicopter.
Is he alive?
Oh, yeah. He's in England right now.
For now, he's alive. $2 billion bounty on your head is pretty hefty.
For some reason, I thought he owed money to the Russians. So it's probably a little safer owing money to the Indians.
I guess.
Who is this guy?
Maybe so. Vijay Mallya, his father started the United Brewers Group in India, and that's where the fortune was made. And then Vijay came along, and his father passed away, and continued doing that. And he was actually in the Indian government for a while, and then he started an airline, which was his final faux pas, I think, besides owning the Mendocino Brewing Company. But
Did the airline, is that why he owes the Indian government money?
Yeah, he decided to buy a whole bunch of new big airplanes, and I guess it didn't work out.
But we should drink a beer, Colin.
Yeah, are you getting thirsty over there?
I am.
Yeah.
I did bring some beers, and I'm going to start with this one just because we were talking about it not too long ago. Anchor Steam.
Okay. The lager?
Yeah, just because it's a cool bottle. It's from the Golden State Warriors championship team.
That seems like the lightest of the options here on the table. I'm reading all the labels as we're sitting here.
I mean, everyone knows Anchor Steam. I thought it'd just be a good one just to get our palates straightened out. And also it was cool because it was the Golden State Warriors championship bottle, which I haven't seen ever. So I guess they have a collaboration with the Golden State Warriors.
No, I didn't realize that. So
that makes sense, right? Everyone in San Francisco, they're going to San, you know, they're really in Oakland, but they're moving to San Francisco, the Warriors, and they won another one. It made me a lot of money as a bartender at Joe's. So thank you, Golden State Warriors. Keep winning.
There you go.
You know, I think they've won four out of the last 5 years. Which interesting. I don't think there's ever been an NBA team with five All-Stars on it. Now we have Boogie Cousins came over from, I think, Sacramento. And so now we'll have five All-Stars on the same team. I don't know if there's ever been five All-Stars, like, you know, on the same exact team. I know there's been four a couple times, but five, I think this will be the first. So we'll open this in celebration of the Golden State Warrior Championship.
Yeah, you always wonder how if all stars are going to get together and be a good team, or if the egos get in the way. It takes a lot to be really good at your game and also be a team player.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And this is interesting. So Anchor is, you know, obviously big on the Giants, and they have some great stuff going on with the Giants. But the Warriors too, good for them. That'll keep the brand going, I think.
Yeah, right. I remember in the 80s, the 49ers had a pretty good streak there.
Yeah.
And we still think about it. And, you know, so this will be something that that people remember for a really long time.
Well, and I just heard that Dwight Clark just passed away. And so I'll raise a glass to
I didn't hear that.
Dwight
Clark. He was great.
He was the catch.
Yeah.
Cheers. Yeah, this lager smells really good. It's not sulfury at all, and
it's a good start. It's a good start to the morning.
There you go. It's smooth. It's light. Yeah, not overly hopped at all.
This is the oldest brewery in California, or no?
It's the oldest brewery in California. It predates Prohibition. You know, the modern revolution of it started in the late 60s when Fritz Maytag bought it. It was going to go under if Fritz didn't buy it. And it was a pretty rough first 10 years for Fritz. The lager is one that they don't normally – it's not what they're known for. They're known for the steam beer.
Yeah, this one
– this might be the first time I've ever had it.
Yeah, 1896. So that's that was a long time ago.
It's a good lager. This is a nice lager beer. It's really well done, really crisp.
So you guys been to the brewery down there?
Yeah, I have been. You weren't there with me?
No.
Oh, we took a bus at Joe's down there. You must have been working that night.
Yeah, I missed that one. But I heard they have some of the largest kettles, the brass ones or
copper.
They have big copper kettles, but yeah. They're 100 barrel?
They're
100 barrel.
So Anchor has 100 barrel batch size. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I'm trying to think that Sierra Nevada has a 100 barrel copper kettle, but it may be stainless clad.
No. It's the 100 barrel is copper.
It's still copper.
The 200 barrel is clad.
And then Anderson Valley also has about 100 barrel.
Which you did bring some of those, which is awesome.
I did bring some Anderson Valley.
And I don't want to give away the secret yet. Maybe I shouldn't, but I love that bourbon barrel stout one. That one is good. I've never tried this one, though, the salted. I don't know if we should salted try one, all the beers we have yet, but that one I've never tried. I'm just going to leave it at that. I haven't tried that one.
Well, since we're only going to get to try three here, we're going to...
try three?
We have six beers here, and three is my limit for
this is great looking
what we have time to taste. So it would take us 2 hours to try all six.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, speaking of... San Francisco, we have this Alcatraz double IPA. I have no idea about it. And we should try that one too.
Alcatraz would be an odd place to try to brew. considering there's not a spring on Alcatraz.
Very limited. And seawater is really the name. Believe it or not.
So where is that from?
Well, this Alcatraz Brewing double IPA that I have here, that I brought, and believe it or not, is made in Florida.
That's funny.
But I have a good friend who lived in this area for a long time. He was the president of the Napa Smith Brewery. And so Steve moved to Florida, but he had developed this brand before that. And so he has the Hub Brewing Company in Florida, which is about 100 barrel batch size, but they specialize in making just other people's beers. And so they produce this beer, and he's marketing it in Florida right now. One of these days, we might see Alcatraz come back out here. But it's a double IPA, and it's really nice. It's a good, straightforward IPA. It's in the can. Everything's in cans, 12-ounce and
I think we should try it for four beers, Colin. We should try this one.
I think we should try this one.
Yes, try it right now. Hand it to me. I will do the pouring. So you're probably not going to find this anywhere. Any beer nuts out there scavenging for the beer, they're not going to find this double IPA.
Unless they're in Florida.
Unless they're in Florida. Yeah. Then
unless they have friends in Florida, then maybe ship them some out.
Yeah. Now, this is an IPA, and it's been in the can now for two and a half months.
Okay.
So it's probably a little bit over its freshness age, but it's still a nice, straightforward IPA. Big on the bitterness.
So what would be?
And so I'm doing some consulting with this. This was the very first batch of the Alcatraz double IPA that we made.
All right, here, Colin. Here's some more reading material. Why escape? You got your glasses on?
Yeah. So it's 8% alcohol, 100 plus IBUs.
Wow.
It says our bold India Pale Ale is full of classic American hops, featuring Cascade, Willamette, and Cluster. Clocking in at 103 IBUs, the lightly roasted malts create a copper-colored ale that has a taste as iconic as a legendary island it is named after. Visit us at alcatraz.beer to learn more. Didn't know there was a dot beer.
I didn't either, as a matter of fact.
All right. So there it is. Yeah, it's a typical beer that I usually drink. It's a double IPA or an IPA, so.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to me.
Yeah, I think the aromas have kind of faded a little. I smell a lot more of the malts than I normally would.
That's right.
In a big IPA.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But I still get the I get some of the hop character, and even some of the cluster, which is one I would expect to go away first.
Yeah, I think that cluster does sort of hold up on as the backbone here, but the Cascade is really sort of shifted off, and it's not as distinct and crisp as it was when we first went into the can. But
so, Don, do you have like a favorite hop that you used with Napa Smith when you were over there? Always seem to keep going back.
You know, Cascade is just. You know, I'm old school, so I grew up with that Cascade, so I really like that flavor and character. And I think in the brewing scene, that Cascade flavor is kind of a basis that everybody kind of looks at and relates back to. And there can be a Zaka or, you know, one of the other really fruity ones. But to give your beer sort of a basis, a familiar kind of character, using a little bit of Cascade in there really sort of brings it home. And then you can have the nuances of other hops there as well.
Okay.
You know, I always used a little bit of Cascade, but when I talk to the younger brewers, I see them doing it with Centennial. Using that Centennial as that that remind you that that this is still beer hop. Yeah.
Yeah, the Centennial's a great hop.
And a little bit bolder than Cascade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But similar characters. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great one, and Centennial's a real standard as well.
There was an era when it was really hard to get, but now the contracts are really long on it. Everybody was like, "Oh yeah, I'll order 5,000 pounds," and then they can't order, they can't take the contract.
Yeah, it would be hell to be a hops farmer, because what are you gonna plant next?
Right, and you only make money on the ones that run out.
That's right.
Everything else is just kind of barely paying the bills.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. It's always been a boom or bust industry for the hop growers, and maybe 1 year out of 10 they'll make some money.
Right. Right now I'm consulting with some guys that have about 300,000 pounds of hops in inventory.
Oh.
and so they're having...
How long do they last? You freeze them, right?
They have 4 years' worth of hops. They have the last four seasons' worth of hops. So.
Wow.
But how long does that last? How long can you sit on those hops?
They're trying to get rid of the oldest ones right now. They don't want them. I would prefer not to have hops that are even a year old. But
a year,
yeah.
When they're pelletized and wrapped in the foil packs and stuff, they're really real good for four or five. They can be four or five years if it's refrigerated. Now
at 0 degrees, they refrigerate them really cold. The cold room is just crazy cold.
But obviously the freshest is the best. But once they're pelletized and put in those foil packs and they're under nitrogen and then they're basically frozen, almost frozen, they can last a long, long time. Maybe not at their pristine character, but really good.
So one of the things that hops are labeled with is a number called HSI, and that's their hop storage index. And it gives you an idea of how to derate the bitterness as they age. And some programs will utilize the HSI number when you're calculating hop additions.
Yeah, back in the day when there was loose hops and everybody's got bales of hops, 1 year was maximum.
Okay, now they probably have new techniques, like you say. They pelletize them, freeze them down with the nitrous.
They put nitrogen in them because oxygen's one of the problem molecules there.
Yep. Yeah, oxidation in the hops. Yeah.
Yeah, because I could just see if you're being a hop grower and you're sitting on like all these pounds and pounds and pounds.
The growers don't. So the growers sell off everything.
Okay.
And then the brokers pick them up, and the brokers do the pelletizing, and all the hop growers do is put them in bales and send them to the brokers. And then it's the broker's job to store them and sell them. But most of these, I've never seen a big freezer on a farm.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But every once in a while, you'll about once a year, an entire hop warehouse goes up in flames.
Yeah, do you remember that big Columbus one? It was the biggest one I'd ever heard
of.
It was about 2005.
Yeah.
Well, so what happens, John, is the...
Hop insurance?
If you pelletize them or bale them when they're too wet, if they're above 8% moisture, they auto-catalyze. There's a molecular reaction that generates heat. So they'll have these huge wall. I mean, one of the ones I saw was about 60 feet tall and 100 foot square. And one bale in the middle won't be getting the cooling. It'll have this exothermic reaction, and that bale in the middle starts to burn. And it takes a few weeks, but it'll burn that whole warehouse down.
Yep.
And it's really common, it comes from not getting them dry enough. So they have to really do moisture analysis on every bale before they stack them.
I would have never even thought that. They can, combust themselves.
Yeah, they're auto-catalytic.
Yeah.
Like those stories you hear where people just blow up.
Yeah, it's yeah. and it happened.
What happened?
And it happens a lot, and it's from the middle of the stack of bales that it burns.
Wow. Well, so where would you store these then? It seems like you would.
Well, you just have to make sure they're 8% or below. So if they're 8% moisture or below, that doesn't happen. And right. And so their goal, they're shooting for 8%. They want as much water in there as possible, because water's
freshen.
Well, and it's cheap.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you know, true. If you're selling hops by the pound, you want them a little heavier.
True. Wow. All right. Yeah. I didn't know that they can do that.
Yeah, that's one more of those strange little complicated things about brewing beer. Watch out for your hops. Don't burn them up.
I don't think you have to worry in brewery size lots of hops.
No,
but
you don't.
But when you have these 400-pound bales that are stacked to the ceiling in a big warehouse, yeah.
Yeah, they can have big problems.
I remember one year it was like, it was maybe 2006, more than 1 million pounds of Columbus.
Oh yeah,
went up, and that was the big hop that year.
No, you're not going to get your hops this year.
Ralph is retired at this point,
sure.
But Ralph came up with the magic blend, and it was I can't remember what it was now, but he had this magic blend that was pseudo Columbus.
Yeah.
That people were using. I just took Columbus out of my recipes for a little while.
Yeah,
I had a bunch, so I only had a 6 week gap in my supply. No. But
that's not too bad. But
Ralph was quite the character, though. He
the magic blend.
Yeah, the magic. Yeah, he did one.
Sounds
for Centennial.
Like something you would smoke.
That's pretty much.
he did one for Centennial, and he did one for.
That's right. He had one for Centennial as well.
Yeah, that one he told me though. That was 30% Columbus and 70% Cascade.
Oh, okay.
And
that's interesting.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, I think Ralph. Was it Olson? Ralph?
Yeah, Ralph Olson.
Yeah. So Ralph was also the guy that did the Alpha Challenge. He was the first one to start to tell people, okay, you think you can make an IPA. Well, how strong can you make it? And, of course, as a hop supplier, what he wants to do is sell bitterness units.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's because that's what hops give beer. And so he started to challenge everybody to see, okay, how bitter a beer can you make and still make it palatable?
Sounds pretty smart to me.
So I'm curious.
Make that money.
In lab assays, without adding extracts, what is the highest bitterness you've ever measured?
Alpha challenge right now.
probably right in that 100, 110 range.
You've been able to measure one that high?
Yeah.
I've never been able to hit it. I've made beers that have calculated over 140.
Yeah.
And then when I send them out to the lab,
right,
94. 94, 87 is common. 94 is my record.
Yeah.
Because the yeast you've been out alpha all of it.
Well, that's right.
And strips it.
And strips it out.
Don Alpha'd you. For the 110.
Yeah, that's
a
87.
The big alpha. Well, that's the Napa Smith Hopageddon.
Yes.
Is designed at 144, but the assay is not quite there.
Well, so, you know, one of the things I've noticed with those beers that are well over 100, there's a sheen of hop oil on the kettle when you empty the kettle.
Yeah.
So you know it's not even going into solution.
Well, that's right.
There's a solubility limit as well.
Yeah, and you get a lot in the trub during the boil, attracts a lot of that bitterness. And then, like you said, the yeast, a tremendous amount of it comes out in the fermentation because of the bitterness units that actually stick onto the yeast and all fall out.
And you know, that was so with big alcohol beers, which normally goes along with big hoppy beers.
Yeah.
Traditionally, you would pitch more yeast.
Now, right? That's right.
But I was always putting less yeast in to try to maintain the bitterness.
Yeah.
And it would, you know, you'd cut the pitch rate down by 30%.
Yeah.
And it would, the ferment would go longer, but but I'd have more IBUs at the end of it.
Right. Well, in some cases, it's a good thing that all those IBUs don't stay in there. How bitter can you handle it? Oh,
I remember the original one was Stone Ruination, the old Ruination. That was one of the first really bitter beers I encountered.
Yeah. Well, you know, those other flavors, and you were talking about barrel aging and bourbon. Oh, man, I'll tell you, a good stout in a bourbon barrel, boy.
And it kicks it up a little bit, right?
Yeah, well, Probably not really.
Just in your mind, not significantly.
It's in your mind. Yes. And it's just that rich flavor that comes through. It's a wonderful combination.
And you brought up the Hopageddon, which is one of my favorite labels, with the hops on fire crashing onto the earth. Is that a year-round beer, or is that just come out certain times of the year?
No, that's year-round beer. So
okay, because I seem to see it quite frequently, but not all the time, so I wasn't sure if it was.
It's out and it's around.
That one you can find, and Beer Nuts out there listening. It's a really great, hoppy, wonderful beer out there. So I like that one from Napa Smith. That was one of my favorite go-tos when I used to come see you guys down the street.
It has that big, rich malt character, but at the same time, that great big hop.
Very well-rounded beer.
Very well. So it gives you a lot of rewards and a lot of manners.
You're listening to KVON 1440. We're going to come back and taste some Anderson Valley in just a second.
Hola, mi valle. This is Isela.
And Gabriela.
Your new host for La Hora with Isela
y Gabriela. Tune in to 1440 AM KVON
or stream KVON.com on Thursday morning at 9 a.m. to our new show, La Hora with Isela
y Gabriela, to learn and listen about current topics, events, and happenings that affect our community.
Listen to your powerhouse Latinas every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. to 10, La Hora with Isela
y Gabriela.
I'm Dane Lobb. I'm a public safety specialist with PG&E. If you encounter a down power line, you need to stay away from it. Call 911. Let our first responders come out and handle it. Police and fire will respond, as well as PG&E. PG&E will make the scene safe.
Safeway Open, presented by Chevron, returns to Napa at the Silverado Resort and Spa October 3rd through the 7th. World Golf Hall of Famer Phil Mickelson and two-time defending champion Brendan Steele headline the field at the PGA Tour's season opener. When the golf ends, the music begins. The Safeway Open Concert Series kicks off on Thursday night with Sammy Hagar. Friday night features Young the Giant, and Saturday night, don't miss Billy Idol live from the Chevron stage. Daily tickets start at just $30 and include access to golf and concerts. New this year, 100% of ticket sales support fire relief right here in the Napa Valley. For tickets and information, visit SafewayOpen.com.
I am a vineyard of knowledge and possibilities. I am painting the contours of my future.
I'm experimenting with wine varietals.
I am a student.
Designers of our own destiny.
Who never stop learning.
We are Napa Valley College.
I'm Carly Anderson, a communications major at Napa Valley College. I was just accepted to University of Southern California. My time at Napa Valley College gave me the knowledge and confidence to pursue my future my way. I encourage you to start your education today or enhance your career by visiting napavalley.edu. Find your future here with day, evening, online, and off-campus classes. Summer classes start June 11th. Fall classes start August 13th. Register now at napavalley.edu.
Mental health issues touches everyone. Whether it is depression, anxiety, or trauma, we all know someone who is suffering right now. Maybe it's you. Don't let stigma silence you and prevent you from living the life you deserve. Hi, I am Marty Palmer, the clinical director at Mentis, Napa's Center for Mental Health Services. Don't suffer in silence. Call us at 707-255-0966, extension 132. Remember, you are not alone.
Beer is good! Beer is good, and stop. Beer is good, beer is good, beer is good.
Let's go drink some beer.
Geeking out with Beer Nuts.
Welcome back to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts. I always love their enthusiasm. I don't know. I think I say that every week.
You see a lot of things every week.
So excited about
I like your weather forecast every week. It's always the same.
It's always a good day to drink beer. there ain't no change in the weather.
Good beer day. good beer day.
Yep. So we've got an Anderson Valley beer to taste, and Leslie was given this beer.
I was given this beer. Being a beer family, we have a lot of connections in the beer world, and we have quite a collection of beer at home, different kinds. And Anderson Valley is close to our home in Hopland, and we have our youngest son is Zach, used to work for Napa Smith and then went to some other work. And while he was at Napa Smith, he met Becca, who was a bartender at the time, but she had a dream of being a brewer. And so she eventually left Napa Smith, went to Heretic and brewed at Heretic for a while, and then, much to our joy, was recruited by Anderson Valley to come over and brew. And she knows that I love bourbon barrel aged beers. So she gave us this very special salted caramel bourbon barrel aged porter, and we thought we would share it with you today.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, I am so excited right now.
Because so am I.
The Anderson Valley, the bourbon barrel one, is very hard to keep in my refrigerator because it goes quick. This one I have never tried, and I guess it's just called the salted caramel.
It says bourbon malt beverage aged 6 months in wild turkey bourbon barrels, and it's got a turkey on the label.
6 months, man.
Like the other one.
Almost have a kid in 6 months.
And they've got their half bear, half deer
logo.
On the logo. Yeah. And the beer.
The beer.
How does it smell to you? It smells pretty malty. Because a little bit of that bourbon, I think, in the...
I'm assuming after 6 months, yeah.
A little bit of that bourbon and that little bit of an oxidized kind of slow oxidation kind of character in it, which is...
But
nice.
You know,
it's very nice.
Yeah, it's not overly bourbon, like some of them that I have.
It's pretty easy to drink, I can tell you that. And I don't know what the alcohol percent is, but it's very good.
Goes down pretty well, doesn't
pretty
it?
Pretty smooth.
Nice.
Pretty
smooth.
Yeah, that's
nice,
very smooth.
And it's like a little bit of the barrel at the end, but nothing nothing over the top.
And you get a little bit of that caramel character there at the end. After you've swallowed, it's kind of left in your palate, and I think that's a little bit more sweetness maybe than the regular barrel-aged.
I like it.
It's nice.
It makes me want to drink another one. And it's a porter, which is pretty cool because they're usually stouts that you have the bourbon.
Right.
The ones that I usually drink because, I like the you know, the barrel-aged stuff. And they're usually put stouts, and it's kind of cool to have a porter instead.
A lot of the contribution of the wood is a bit of a caramely kind of character. So by adding additional sort of salted caramel, if they're describing it, those kind of flavors go mix really nicely with the wood kind of flavor too.
And I do taste a little sodium in there.
Yeah. And I was looking for that.
Yeah, there is. I did look for it too.
I'm about ready to take another sip.
I'm sensitive to sodium in beer. I worked with a water softener ahead of the brew house for about 9 months, and and couldn't figure out what the problem was.
What the heck's going on here?
This is going to sound weird, but I think beer drinkers who don't drink beer would love this beer, if that makes any sense at all.
It's a bold flavor, though, but it's not overly bitter.
It's mostly that rich sort of wood, caramely.
Or people who don't normally drink dark beer would really like this beer also.
Right.
It's a very easy drinking beer, and there's no alcohol listed on the label. That means it has to be below 5.5%. Is that correct?
Yes, right. No. That's right.
Well, and I think this would be a really great beer to wind up the night with a nice piece of dark chocolate cake.
6%, really, Colin.
Oh, is it on there?
Yeah, it's on there.
Oh, I couldn't find it.
Chocolate cake and salted caramel bourbon barrel aged Anderson Valley. Okay, that sounds like dessert for me.
Or vanilla ice cream.
Or vanilla ice cream.
Or tiramisu.
Ooh, tiramisu.
There you go.
Or salted caramel ice cream.
I was at a restaurant 5 weeks ago, and we're in the south, and it's one of these old southern mansions that had been converted into a restaurant.
Oh yeah,
right. And had just some of the best southern, traditional like southern steakhouse kind of food.
Yeah,
was what I ordered.
Sure,
and. They had tiramisu on the on the menu, and it was like, okay, if you're going to have it, this is the place that's probably going to do a good job with it. And it was really good. They had three different kinds, and as a table, we split all three.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that's great.
I won't tell John where I was because he gets mad at me.
Yeah, do not tell me you were at some barbecue place.
I sent John a picture on that trip of one of the most famous barbecue places in the country that we were eating lunch at.
Oh, man.
It was just phenomenal, too. It was really good. Yeah. It was a dry rub.
I think now I know how John's going to plan his next vacation. It's like over barbecue.
I do the Kansas City.
Oh, do you that already?
Yeah. Oh, man. I don't know if you guys want to tell Luau, but I have some good barbecue underground pig. Man, that was really, really good.
Yeah, we didn't do the Luau thing, but I've done it before at times. And oh, man, the pig that they cook in Hawaii under the ground and
I don't know if it's the salty air or just the atmosphere or what is what it's.
I think it's the banana leaves. Leaves really add a lot of character. I think
a lot of moisture to it. Yeah, that's for sure, and keeps it just so the meat just falls off the bones. Oh man,
yeah, pretty much. Guy just took the pig skull right out of the carcass and was carrying it around. I mean, that's just fell off.
Yeah,
I mean, that's how tender it was. Usually, the head stays pretty much the head, but this thing was just a bone. Like everything was just falling off. Like I don't know what technique they use besides digging in the ground and using leaves and then covering it back up and using the hot rocks inside them and outside them, and whatever they do it makes the pork like taste phenomenal. I mean, a lot could be with, you're on vacation, so this is the best pork you ever had, you're like five Mai Tais in, but I'm telling you, that was one of the best.
Did you have poi?
Yes, you have to.
Have to have poi.
I liked it just because I like weird stuff.
Yes, you have to, right?
Yeah, you have to have, they put some on your plate regardless, but I liked it. It doesn't really taste like anything, but that's fine.
It tastes like school paste.
I don't know what it tastes like. That's right.
Yeah.
Take your Boy Scout helping. You have to eat, take a spoonful of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I've always thought poi would make a good adjunct.
Yeah. Oh yeah, really? That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I think you could use poi as an adjunct.
It's starchy, right?
It's starchy. Yeah, you'd have to add a bunch of amylase somehow.
Yeah, we're gonna call Maui Brewing. Give them our information.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure everybody in Hawaii has thought of using poi. It's one of the cheapest things they've got.
Probably. The only question is, how do you make that look good on a label? I don't know. It's a pile of poi.
Well, I mean, the taro root itself is pretty. It's pretty. Well, so you take a picture of the plant.
There you go. That would do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of the poi itself. Yeah.
Okay. Whoever does this has to give us some kind of royalty.
At least a free beer.
That's right. Maybe a free beer. Where's the first poi beer out there?
I mean, if you're in Hawaii, why ship corn over there to use an adjunct,
Right.
I mean,
right.
They have rice fields, so you'd use either rice or poi or something that grows there. Well, I mean, they have to ship everything over there to make beer. So. That's why I ask how much it's going to cost, because it's got to be crazy expensive.
Could you use sugar cane as an adjunct?
You can, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Sure.
They got that out there. A lot of that.
Yeah. They can do that.
Why not?
and actually, it would be interesting to, instead of using the sugar itself, to use the whole cane.
Yeah, right.
There are a lot more flavors in the cane itself.
I think we're just creating a beer here.
A poi and cane.
Sounds kind of bland so far.
we're a little short of enzymes, too. So.
That's right. That's right.
It'd be like cane and pable. Poible.
So I think we should save that bourbon barrel stout.
Yeah, we should save it.
But we do have some time. Maybe what else do you have over there? That Remix IPA?
Remix, Green Flash, San Diego. I don't know what they've been doing over there at Green Flash, but I always like their beer. So anytime I see a Green Flash beer, especially if it's something I haven't tried, I don't know if they sold or they're thinking about selling. Do you hear anything on Green Flash lately?
No, haven't heard.
Okay, well, anyway, it's a beer, and this looks pretty cool. Some more reading material for you, but this is, like you were talking about earlier, Don, the old school hops, Cascade, Columbus, and Summit.
Oh, yeah, there
so
you go.
So this is the old school, like, remix, which is basically what it's called. You can still find that out there, and it's just one of the older school hop, fresh hopped additions that they made that I thought it'd be cool to bring onto the show. So we can drink it. But there's a little reading there if you want.
I've got a little bit of reading first.
Okay.
So I'm pulling this out of Food and Wine magazine. After an extremely shaky year, San Diego-based Green Flash Brewing Company announced this week that it was sold at foreclosure to a private equity group. Though the brand will continue on, ownership has changed, and the direction the company will take from here isn't entirely known. What is known, however, is that Green Flash saw both stunning growth and an unfortunate downfall in the past 16 years, and was once a maker of amazing beers, has left behind a cautionary tale. Huh. So...
Oh, goodness.
So I think I did hear something about Green Flash.
And this article was April 4th, 2018.
So they went April. April. So they went into bankruptcy and were sold.
And then sold out of foreclosure, yeah.
Son of a gun. I didn't hear all
of that. Okay, so the beer that we have here, the next hit single, we're kicking it old school with Remix IPA, using a mashup of our favorite classic hops and fresh techniques. Cascade, Columbus, and Summit offer a bold aroma with bright riffs of dank pine and citrus balanced by soft malts. This solid gold hit is a crisp cloud pleaser. And it says old school hops because Summit is... Boy, I'm feeling really old if Summit's an old school hop here. Where's the Chinook?
Yeah, right, there you go. It does smell really danky, though. I don't know if that's just the keyword I pulled off your little scenario over there, but it does smell pretty
hoppy, it does.
Danky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Danky, Yankee, danky doodle dandy right there.
You know, I really like it. It came out really nice.
It's a big contrast over what we just had, though. It's just like your tongue took a splash in the hopsicle. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. The Summit comes through really well on it.
Yeah, the hop flavor is really nice across the palate. It's it's not over the top, but it has really delicate, nice flavor all the way through. This is a very nice beer. This is very drinkable.
And it leaves the back of your tongue completely clear, the whole flavor, which is interesting.
Yeah, with a little bit of bitterness, but not... Did they say anything about IBUs in this? Probably not, but...
Not on that side.
Yeah.
But there's more written.
Because it's not huge. It's, it might be 50 or 55.
And the color is pretty light for an IPA. It's a little bit lighter than normal IPAs.
It just says 6.2% alcohol. Uh-huh. That's all it says, so... I would say 60s, mid-60s.
Yeah. I think they're shooting for that, hey, let's make a really nice IPA and make it drinkable. We're not going to look at a huge alcohol or a huge hop thing, but just a really nice IPA.
And
that's good.
And then use some of the old stuff.
And to win
at
GABF right now, that's what you're doing for the American IPA category.
Yeah.
Because everybody's already pushed that edge of the category.
Well, that's right.
And so now judges are looking for something in the middle.
Yeah. Something coming back to palatable.
Well, you know, now there's, five styles of IPA in the BJCP guidelines. Mm. So
I think it's three, five. Right?
Mm. Well, there used to be two,
right,
which was single, double.
Yeah.
But now there's single, double was imperial, so there's single, imperial, whatever they're calling the triple,
right?
Hazy.
Oh, you got the hazy, of
England,
course.
English IPA.
Right.
English IPA is an older one too.
What is an English IPA?
They're typically 50 to 65 IBUs, much more malty.
Low alcohol?
6%.
Yeah.
Piney.
Right, they're looking at
or
other
citrus characters.
Yeah, they're looking more like Fuggle hop flavors, kind of
earthy.
More earthy, I guess, would be the best way to describe it, or woody.
Woody, but not spicy, not citrus, not fruity.
Piney.
Yeah, piney, not fruity.
So why is there so many now? There was only two back in the day.
Because everybody's brewing IPAs, so
everybody's pushing the envelope on it.
When they get 300 entries for one category, they're like, "Okay, let's break these up." and Gordon Strong, who runs that program for BJCP, just decided he was tired of it, and he wrote out all the new styles. And
So what do you in Colin? What do you think of the cloudy IPA category? I mean, it seems like a strange thing, really.
I'm a beer purist.
We did like two or three shows on that. Just
already?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, just him breaking them down because I'm a beer purist, and
I don't like them. But so I asked some of the beer nuts that I know outside of them just listening. I asked some of the beer nuts to send me some fresh samples.
Oh,
because the samples have to be really fresh in order for them to taste right.
Yeah.
They don't, even a month in the can.
They're gone.
Yeah. So I got a bunch of refrigerated samples sent on day of release.
Oh.
And including a bunch from Trillium in Boston.
Oh, excellent.
And they were phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
Just absolutely delicious. Tasting those beers, I understood why you liked why they were a thing.
Yeah.
Tasting our attempts on the West Coast, we're failing.
Yeah,
uh-huh. And uh-huh. these breweries on the East Coast, they're a thing because they are a delicious beer. But you know, one of the criticisms of them, they call them Twitter beers because uh-huh. unless you get a tweet and go taste them right then, they get
done.
Ruined. Yeah, and
so their shelf life isn't as long.
It isn't very long at all. Okay. So Gil Sanchez. At Sierra Nevada, about the same time was doing the same thing, head of R&D at Sierra Nevada. He was doing the same thing and shipping samples and was measuring the dissolved oxygens. And he didn't tell me which brands were what, but he said over 250 ppm oxygen was common.
Holy.
What's a ppm?
So we think about 30 ppb, 30 parts per billion in oxygen as being an acceptable bottling range. He was talking nearly 1,000 times, nearly 10,000 times that.
Yeah,
wow.
So that's why they don't stay.
They don't last out there.
And they're all canned. And
mm-hmm. Sierra Nevada came out with a hazy IPA
from that research project.
It must have been.
They did 30 ppm, uh-huh. 30 ppb rather oxygen. That's something they're not willing to compromise on.
Right. So is this more like a trend, or you think it's going to stay now they have their own little section in the...
I think it's own little section. I really do. I think if you live next to Trillium, you're going to continue to go to Trillium and have some great beers.
Yeah.
It's a different business model, though. Those beers are never going to... Trillium is never going to build a market in California because there's no way they can ship them.
Right.
And they might make a different beer, but the reason why beers evolved the way they did was so that we could store them and transport them. And these guys, these brewers, threw away all of what we've learned to try to make something different. And they did. They made something different and delicious, but they made some big compromises, including storability and transportability.
You know, and this is kind of one of those exciting things about craft beer, because now we're starting to get locations that are specifically known for a type of beer. Which is how it should be. You know, what's going to be in Wisconsin? What's going to be out there in New York? And you have the West Coast IPAs, which the East Coast guys kind of try to copy, but
can't.
Don't do a good job.
Yeah, but
they
can. Yeah.
They can't. But the West Coast can make this tremendous. And so different regions of the country now are going to have different specialty beers that they do best, and nobody else can do it. Like California,
let me ask you another
like the sourdough
question,
bread.
Don, since we're talking about different kind of styles of beers, is the sour beer. I haven't been able to get my head around it yet. I keep trying. Like, I keep thinking that I'm going to like it. I keep trying and trying and trying. And there are a couple out there that I can, you know, palate, but I just can't see myself drinking a whole pint of these sour beers. I would just like to know some of your beer expertise on, like, how you feel the sour trend is going. Are they going to be around forever?
I think they've been around
forever. They predate single culture beers.
Like they're trending like way high. Like a lot of people, because I'm a bartender, ask me for the sour beer.
Yeah, well, it might be like why human beings like sitting around the campfire. Because back in the day when the cavemen were sitting around, that was your TV. You was sitting around the campfire. And
as far solving
as I
the
can
world's
tell,
problems over a beer.
And solving the world's problems over a sour beer. So if you're a caveman, you can probably make a good sour beer, is what I'm saying.
But so you're I take it you're not a fan either? Or?
Well, I, you know,
how many sour beers did you let in the building at Napa Smith?
Zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
It was you're the only person I've ever known that's had a policy that no wild organisms.
Well, I asked
the
right person then. Because I'm totally not a fan either, but I keep trying to like leave myself open to it.
You know, through my brewing career, you know, all the for a sour beer, all the flavors and the characters and the nuances in a sour beer was what I was trying to avoid my entire brewing career.
Right, just like I was trying to avoid peanuts.
Don't get them on peanuts, man.
No, sour beers don't make it for me. I can't get past the idea that they're spoiled.
Okay.
Spoiled beer. You're listening to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Leslie.
Absolutely, Colin. It's been a pleasure again.
Cheers.
Commence Exxon and Mobil field test. Scientist observes Subject C at station. Subject C forgot his wallet. Subject C uses the SpeedPass Plus app to pay for gas and earn rewards with the tap of a button. Subject C is a cool guy. Subject C actually looks like my cousin Carl. Subject C is my cousin Carl. Conclusion, SpeedPass Plus is the quick, fast, secure way to pay for gas.